The full Will Chase experience. I love it.
The following is a production by Cutting to the Chase Podcast.
I am with Tom Morgan, host of Sports Collecting with Tom Morgan on Saturdays on ESPN 1000 at 7 a.m. Central. How's it going, Tom?
Very well. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, definitely. Really excited to chat with you because I've definitely caught the show on Saturdays. I've always been kind of a sports collector anyway, but maybe more so in the last few years. So it's been interesting for me to kind of tap in a little bit more. And so before we kind of get into the actual sports collecting and that side of it, I was curious how it kind of started for you. Were you basically like us, like, or like most people, a sports fan that started collecting maybe casually and then it kind of became more of a serious hobby, passion, career type of a thing? Or how did it kind of get started for you?
Well, for me, it started. I've got a couple good stories from when I was young. I got stories about a lot of things that I consider good. Okay, I have a grandson who's about 40. He's just turning 4 this week, and I could see him doing this. I was probably 4 years old at the grocery store with my mom, and she's like at the butcher counter or whatever getting some meat, and I'm standing over a little to the side, and I look down, and there's packs of baseball cards there. So 4-year-old me says, huh, I think I'll open a few of these. Yep. So I just started, I opened a pack, put them down, opened another pack, put them down. Now, the butcher or whatever goes to my mom, ma'am, I think your son's opening packs of cards over there. And my mom cracks up, and I'm like, what? They're there, and you have to buy that stuff before you open it. So that's the first thing I remember with cards. I thought they were cool at the time. And then we used to go to my grandma's house in the summer for a few days. We'd stay there. And next door to her was a guy we used to play baseball with all the time. He was a little bit older than me, my older brother, closer to his age. And we'd get a nickel and be able to go and get a pack of cards. We'd walk about a block and a half away. There were a couple places that sold baseball cards. So we would do that. And one day he goes, you want to see I got a box of cards. So he brings them out, and he had, I don't know how many, he must have had 300-400 from 1961. And this was 3-4 years after that, probably. I was like, how did you get all these? And then I remember seeing a Hank Aaron. And from that point on, I really liked them. But then I started playing more sports, didn't do much with cards, didn't buy packs of cards or anything for a long time. Went to college, got married, got a job. When I'm at my job, I call on a guy, and real nice guy, used to talk to him, and then do the sales stuff. Well, one day I go in to see him, and he's got all these old cards on his desk. And this was probably, I would think, around 1980 or something, and he had cards from the 60s. I was like, wow, what's the deal with that? He goes, oh, there was just an article in Sports Illustrated with, I think it was when Mr. Mint was in it, so probably around that time, and talking about how valuable some of this stuff was. And I was like, you know what? I think we saved some cards, me and my brother, like a couple shoe boxes. And so we did. So I kind of started getting back into it that time. I picked some stuff up, did a couple shows, and stuff to see if stuff actually sold. And so forth. And then, just gradually started getting back into it. My company got sold. My wife had been a nurse when we had kids. She wasn't doing much. And then I was like, the company's getting kind of screwed up with the new owner. How about we try? I open a shop and you work a few days a week as a nurse, get the benefits and stuff, and we'll see how it goes. And what was it, maybe 31 years later, I closed the shop and just doing the stuff now with online. And so it worked out. You know, obviously there were ups and downs, and, you know, with the economy, the baseball strike, things like that would hurt. But then there'd be good years and just meeting all the people and stuff. I mean, it was great. It was a lot of fun. And I started doing a show one time at the shop. In the early 90s, maybe mid 90s, a guy comes in and he goes, you know, I do a radio show on Saturdays. Would you want to be a guest? And I had never been on anything, done anything like that. I don't know. What do you want me to do? He goes, I'll just ask you a few questions, stand for a few minutes, and that's all you have to do. You know, it was before I opened the shop on a Saturday morning. I was like, all right. So I get on there. And there's like three or four phone calls with people with questions. I ended up being on maybe 20 minutes, something like that, 30 minutes, I don't know. And when I'm done, the guy and his partner that do the show, they go, we never get any phone calls. That was unbelievable. And I thought to myself, you know, that was kind of fun. And then I did another guest thing one time. And, you know, then I did, for whatever reason, being on the air, I've just felt natural doing it. So, you know, just kind of developed then doing a show.
And you've been on the radio since what, 2019, right?
No, actually, the second time we started, it was me, Bill Huggins, and Vince Clementi. Bill Huggins from Huggins and Scott was the sponsor, and Vince Clementi from ERC was the other sponsor. And we've been doing it, I think, since 2013.
Oh, okay, even longer.
But before that, I did a show from like 02 to 08.
Okay.
And, you know, so a long time off and on. And I actually started it by myself a half hour. Somebody contacted me from the station about advertising. I had done a thing on a little station in Elgin for a little while, just, you know, doing it with somebody and it was kind of fun, so we did it. So I said, you know, they were talking about advertising on the show, and I was like, well, you know, I did a show, what would you think about this? And what we ended up doing, I think it was for 10 weeks in 02, I did a half hour show by myself, and I thought to myself, well, this will probably be the only time I do this. So I got to do something good with it. So what I did, I had in the shop, I had just gotten a PSA 7 Michael Jordan rookie, which at the time, a 7 Jordan was about $300, which was a lot of money, but nothing like what it is now. Mm-hmm. But I thought, okay, what I'm going to do, I'm going to give away the Jordan rookie at the end of the 10 or 12 weeks, whatever it was, and I'll just write a little ticket, and if anybody calls in, I'll keep the tickets and put them in a tub, and on the last show, I'll give it away. Well, from the first day I was on till the end, like, the phone lines were lit up, like, the whole time. And, like, people said, because they knew that was a prize, and all they had to do was call in and ask a question. And but I'm thinking 7 to 7:30 on a Saturday morning, there's not going to be anybody listening. But, you know, especially then, 20 some years ago, a lot of people driving to work, everybody had radios in their cars at the time. They weren't doing a lot of other stuff, so a ton of people were listening. And I ended up getting a guy who listened, ended up being a sponsor for the next few years. Mm-hmm. Then, and did it with me, and it worked great. And the guy who I ended up winning the drawing was a guy who worked for the city of Naperville, I think, and he used to come in once in a while after that. But it was really neat. It was fun. And then it just developed, you know, from there. And I never was nervous ever doing a show, except for one time. We had a producer in the early 2000s that used to get some really good guests. Like, we had Whitey Ford on three times. We had bunch of different, you know, really big name athletes on. But the one guy that really made me nervous, he had written a book. It was Pat Summerall. And he used to be, you know, he was a real good football player, but then he used to do announce football games with Madden. And he had this voice that when he started, well, good morning, Tom. It was like the voice of God. And I was like, oh, that's the one time I remember being nervous on the show. Other than that, for whatever, it just felt natural and I liked doing it.
I mean, that was awesome. And just in general, like how it started and like you said, where it's at now. And the fact that you've gotten to talk with guys like Whitey Ford, Pat Summerall, that's awesome, too. And so what was your job out? Like, where did you go to college? And then what was your job out of college?
I went to a small college, Knox College in Galesburg, Illinois. I met my wife there, actually. So it turned out good, but I was a decent basketball player. I originally was going to go there and play basketball. I hurt my ankle a couple times and some other things, and I just ended up. But, you know, I was hoping to get a bigger school for basketball, and I had a couple possibilities. And then the one University of Wisconsin was like, you know, you'd have to be a walk-on, and we couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. So I ended up, you know, going there for that. Lost my desire to play and do all the stuff you had to do to be good at that time. And so just kind of, you know, messed around a lot in college, got through it. Then I got a job. I was working part-time for a newspaper when I was off in the summer, and I ended up gave me an advertising job, and then I worked with another advertising company that was really good. The owners were great, but when they sold, it fell apart. You could see it going downhill, so I wanted to get out of it, and that's when I switched to doing the card shop with my wife being the nurse. And like I said, we did that for a long time. And one of the reasons we wanted to do that, our kids were small, we wanted to be around more for them as much as we could and everything, and it worked out real well.
No, that's awesome. And then, so you kind of had that media background anyway with the newspaper, at least in some ways, and then, of course, the radio. Yeah.
Yeah, and the advertising. So, like, I look at a show, well, you know, I have advertising sponsors, but I thought, okay, if I'm going to have sponsors, I want to have sponsors who can also be on the show with me. And Bill Huggins and Vince were great. Bill Huggins died suddenly. It's been, I think it's 2.5 years now, roughly, where, you know, the last I had talked to him, we were planning on doing the show again that year. He had the auction schedule, sounded fine, but then he passed away, and we thought that was going to be the end. But everybody that did it, the same people are doing the show now that were doing it then, and everybody wanted to keep doing it if we could work something out. And it turned out that Robert Edward Auction bought Huggins and Scott Auctions after Bill died, and they had been talking about it even before that, I guess. And Brian Dwyer from Robert Edward Auctions doing the first segment is just perfect. I mean, you couldn't have picked a better replacement to keep it going. So we're still going.
And then, so obviously you're on ESPN 1000.
Yeah, when I did that 10, 12 weeks or whatever, we used to do it. We'd go down to the studio at State and Lake and do it from there. I think originally it was the 7th floor, and then they opened up and started doing it on the right on the street across from the Chicago Theater. And that was actually a blast because people would walk by, wave, take pictures, all that stuff. I mean, that was fun. Then with COVID, they set it up where we could do it through our phone on this Comrex thing, and it works great. So we started doing it from the Park District, and now I just do it from home.
Gotcha.
And real convenience.
Gotcha, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's awesome how you've gotten to where you are with it. And obviously it seems like, in general, like collecting hobby, or whether it's a hobby for people, collecting, however they classify it for themselves, it seems like the dream type of, you know, job or, you know, hobby, at least, to be involved with. And for you, you've kind of obviously made it, I guess, like a second career with the radio and everything. What I find curious about it is, like, I've never been a serious card collector. I mean, I always had cards as a kid, like anyone, you know, getting them from the stores, like you were mentioning before and stuff like that. And I never really knew, like, you know, much about the grading. And I've kind of learned a little bit more of that over the last couple of years. I know I've emailed you questions, which is awesome that you respond, by the way. It's super cool how I'm able to ask a question and, you know, you take the time to get back to me on that. But it started about like 2 years ago. I randomly decided to get a card again. I hadn't bought cards in forever. So I'd gotten a card. It was through my job that I had gotten like a gift card. And I was like, okay, I'm going to use this. I decided to get it on like a $50. It was like a $50 card. So I got a Jeter card for maybe it was like 40 bucks or whatever, 50 bucks. So, I mean, you know, I was like, okay, I'm not spending any of my real money getting this card. I'm a big Jeter fan. I am a Chicago sports fan. I'll get to that in a second, too. But I was like, yeah, you know, I've got a lot of Jeter stuff. I'll get a card. I was like, I'm not going to get a card. And then I thought, yeah, I'll get a card. So it started basically again with like one random card a couple of years ago. And since then, it's kind of like accumulated. I've gotten so many more cards since then. And yeah, it was like one card. I had a bunch already, like I said, from when I was a kid in my closet. And now it's kind of started up again. So what I was, you know, trying to figure out and decipher was like, you know, I see card prices online, and I get probably most of my cards from the Baseball Hall of Fame because I'm a member, so I get discounts and free shipping, which helps. So, you know, I'll look at cards, I'll see prices, and I'm like, you know, one is like a PSA graded card, another one's another company that graded it, and I never really know or quite understand exactly like what I'm looking at. So it's like when you see cards that are graded like a PSA 7 or a 6 or, you know, whatever the case may be, and the price that's attached to it, I guess you probably like research, or, you know, maybe you check eBay and other sites to see like what they're selling for. But like, how did you kind of get into like the very specifics, I guess, from a collector perspective of, you know, kind of knowing what you're looking at and knowing if it's worth that price, if you're going to pay it?
Well, that's a big part of it, that you, first off, you want to spend what you have to spend, extra money. You know, don't go over your budget. Don't go crazy when you're first starting to get into things and buy everything that's out there. You know, do the more research that you can do, the better. But a good thing to do, they used to call it TerraPeak. I think they call it product research now through eBay, where you can type in, let's say, Derek Jeter, and what, 1993 Derek Jeter, and see what things are going for. Let's say his Upper Deck SP rookie, that's his big one from that year. Look what they go for non-graded, and look what they go for graded, and you want to see a few of them, because every once in a while somebody will throw out somewhere, you know, have his friends blow something up, and it's not a legitimate thing. You want to see, you know, an actual group of sales. But the good part about that site, it shows final prices. If a buy it now or best offer, it'll show what they took, because people can ask like crazy buy it now prices, but you want to know what things actually sold for. So then what you want to do, if you have a card, look it over, look for centering, surface, front and back, look for any dings, you know, look it over real closely. And if you, let's say you think, well, this should be able to get an 8. If an 8 sells for $200 or more, it's probably worth sending it to PSA. If it sells for $10 or $15, it's not even going to cover the grading price, so that's not any good.
Yeah.
But it probably won't pay to do it unless you just want to preserve it for long term. But you can look for different things that you like that are already graded, and you can try to buy lots, and you keep some and sell some. I do that a lot. Now, what I ended up doing for my collection is I'm collecting Hall of Fame cards of MLB and basketball mainly. Those are the sports I used to play, and I know the most about them, and I like them the most. I mean, I love the Bears, but I never played organized football. We used to play tackle football some, but I never played organized that like baseball and basketball. So I thought, well, you can't collect everything. I zeroed into that. Getting Hall of Famers, and if they're graded, like PSA has a thing, it's a registry where it organizes everything. It shows auction prices realized. It gives you an idea of what your actual value is, and it helps keep you organized. So I've been trying to do more from that. I still have boxes of stuff in storage that I sold a bunch of the stuff from the store, but there's still, I mean, more than I could even probably want to go through to see. But a lot of the stuff, there's not a lot of big stuff in it. It's a lot of common or minor star stuff that, you know, it's pretty neat, but it's too much for me. I like getting it more organized and just getting things that I know what the value is and so forth, and doing it that way for my collection. But everybody's different on that. And what it boils down to, like you put a card up on Twitter where it was Pete Crow Armstrong, and it's a neat looking, that was a mini card, I think, from Ginter. Okay, if that's what you like the player, you like the card, that's a great card to get. You don't have to get the most expensive. I just saw something, I think a card of his sold for like $35,000 or something. It's like, some of that stuff to me is, on guys who have barely played, is just kind of ridiculous. But, you know, there's market for it. I mean, guys, there's high-end guys that have a lot of money that, but I mean, I've seen so many guys that have a good few months and then kind of fizzle out after that. You just never know long term.
Right. Yeah.
You've got to be careful spending a lot of money on guys who haven't played long enough where if they, let's say pitchers finally figure out a way to get them out and they just don't do much after that, you know, you can lose a couple $100s, but you don't want to. And once again, how much money do you have that you can afford to lose? But like for me, I don't want to be losing thousands of dollars on some guy that turns into nothing.
Right. Yeah, yeah. You know, that's a good point. Because like I would say a lot of the cards I have gotten of like Jeter and like Mariano Rivera, I've gotten some of those cards from Cooperstown that were a couple hundred because they were signed or whatever the case may be. So at least it's like, okay, I already have, and you had kind of said this to me before about, you know, if you collect what you like, then, you know,
yes.
So that's kind of my, I guess that's kind of my system. It's kind of like, okay, I'm comfortable, like, I might splurge a little bit, it's signed, it's a couple, and that's the other thing, too. It's like, well, I would like, personally, I would like to think if I'm spending, like, let's say $150 on a card, that it's at least worth that much, and who knows, like, I'm not, like, looking to sell it anyway. It's more for my my value and my personal, you know, whatever affinity towards it. But, you know, it's nice to think and, you know, like, oh, it'd be cool if it was worth, you know, as much as you're spending, if not more.
Right.
But yeah, as far as like Pete Crow and like I got a couple Skeens cards after his legendary, you know, start to last, you know, his career last year. Yeah. And like you said, you never know how they're going to go. And that's kind of my thought, too, is like a lot of the cards, whether it's Skeens or Crow, it's probably, I'm not spending any more than, let's say, $15. You know, it's $5 to $15 type card. So it's like, okay, I'm comfortable with that. Like, I'm not looking to spend, like you said, a couple $100 on a guy that's still unproven. Because I want to think, like, hopefully it would be worth a lot. But you don't want to, you know, like you said, I don't have the money to throw on.
Look at it kind of like a painting.
Yeah.
Get a painting that you like on the wall and if let's say it turns out to be a really valuable painting, it's like, wow, that's great, but I don't necessarily want to sell it.
Right.
But you don't buy a real expensive for your budget painting because, well, I'm sure this is going to be worth 10 times this in 20 years. I mean, you know, that's doesn't necessarily happen. It's like that with cards. Pitchers to me are the riskiest because you know, they hurt their arm or their shoulder. They get Tommy John, they miss time. They hurt their shoulder, they're never right again. You know, Paul Skeens had that one card that got blown all. I think it ended up going for over $1 million at Tops.
Yeah.
Fanatics were really publicizing and the Pirates wanted to buy it. So that turns into a whole different thing. That's businesses that want publicity that start bidding on something. It's not even really a card anymore. Mm-hmm. It's a publicity thing to get people to, I mean, the people who buy it, if they put out their business name, it gets publicized, free ads all over the country, sometimes all over the world, right. You know, so you have to, and obviously you and I aren't buying those real expensive stuff, but I think that's what happens on some of that. It's they're looking for the publicity angle and so forth. Some of it, guys just have more money than they know what to do with, and they like to get the best thing out there, then they don't care what the price is. So it's good for auctions and things like that when you get a couple guys with a lot of money that really want something, that's for sure.
And so, like, obviously there's different card companies like Topps, Bowman, Donruss, Fleer, Upper Deck, you can go on from there. But Topps is obviously one of the top primary companies people are familiar with. But like, do you get a little bit more leery with maybe, I don't know, other companies? I don't want to put any specific company. Like, you probably, you know, all the different ones out there and you probably are familiar with a bunch of them. But like, are you less inclined maybe to get a card from a certain company unless you like the card itself? But like,
yeah, if I like the card and I'm buying it for the right price.
Yeah.
Like, you know, let's say somebody like Leaf, for instance, they have something out there, an autographed card, and I really think it's a neat looking card and it's a guy that I need for my collection and it's already graded. I might get that. But I'm not going to pay for a similar card of that Topps would make of them because they don't sell for as much for similar numbered cards. You know, if that makes sense to you, you just have to, whatever you're getting, do the research that you're paying what the current market price is, not what. See, it doesn't matter what anybody paid for it 5 years ago.
Right,
that's nothing. I find that even looking at houses and stuff where some, well, I did paid this for this house and I put this much money into it, so I expect I should get this for the house. It's like, it doesn't really matter. It's what's the market price on that house with those improvements and what's it selling for now, higher or lower. And that's with similar with cards. Doesn't matter if you overpaid for it 5 years ago, what's the market on it now? So you just have to keep all that in mind. And but, you know, you were saying, like, you like stuff and you're collecting things. Well, the guys typically who end up building valuable collections, they start young, they get stuff they like. Sometimes they'll sell some of the stuff, they tire of it and get other things. Learn as much as you can, and a lot of times those are guys that end up with valuable collections.
Yeah.
So, you know, not really trying to, you just kind of do.
Of all the card companies out there, do you have kind of a preferred one that you look at first? You know, you might buy from others, but is there like a favorite company that you kind of like to look at, or?
See, what I mainly collect now is vintage stuff, you know, 1975 or older, and that's mainly Topps and Bowman, but. And then you look back, there's the Gaudi cards from the 30s. There's 1948 Leaf. So it just depends on the year and the cards. You know, there's tobacco cards. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of more from the 50s and 60s, and I have a lot of that stuff. So I've kind of been dipping my toes into getting something that's not too expensive from, like, Playball from 1940 or the, some of the Gaudi. There's different Gaudi products from the 30s. I just had, I'm going to be meeting with somebody, a listener, had some Gaudi stuff from 1936 that I'll be sending in for him to auction. And I don't see it that much. And I'm thinking, oh, I want to get one of those, you know. So a lot of times it's, you see something looks cool. Like,
yeah.
I really like the 1933 DeLong cards. They're, and I don't have one. So at some point I want to get a Hall of Famer that I don't have that's PSA graded. Sometimes SGC too, but PSA, the values that they organize are only include PSA cards. You can put like SGC in there, but you have to figure the values separately for the non-PSA cards. But anyway, so it just really depends on the year and what you're trying to do. But newer stuff, Upper Deck was, I really liked them when they first came out, and then they, I don't know, they had problems. And Upper Deck authenticated autographs, like if you're going to buy a Jordan autograph, to me you want it to be Upper Deck,
right?
Authenticated. But so there's not, it just really depends what you're trying to buy. Different card companies have different strengths, and just buy them for the current market price.
Yeah, I think that's what was confusing at first for me. To there's like so much to kind of look into and delve into, and then it was kind of like, well, I'm a very casual, I would consider myself a very casual collector, so I'm like, you know what, for the most part, I'm like, I'll see a Jeter or a Vera card, and like I said, I get a lot of my stuff from Cooperstown just because it started with the one. I get the free shipping, and I that's the other thing too, is you, like you mentioned with cards, you can look at, if you're there in person to look at them, you can check out, like you said, the corners and the centering. And that was stuff that I learned or realized too, was like, you know, certain cards might have like a duller edge, or it's a little off center or something like that. So a lot of the cards I'll get will come in the mail, but I've always been, you know, pretty satisfied with what I've gotten, especially when I'm not spending a ton of money anyway.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, it was like something I got. I think it was the Ernie Banks. It was like a postcard, and I remember asking you about it. And so I one thing that you'd showed or mentioned was that you could check it on the PSA. You can put it in the registry, and it did show up, which was cool to say. Like, I mean, I knew it was probably legit, but I was like, it's nice to see that reflected on their official database. Like, okay, cool, there it is. And then there was another one I had that didn't show up, so I contacted them, and they were like, oh, we can add this because it somehow slipped through the cracks. So I'm like, okay, cool. There's like certain cards out there where it'll have an autograph on it, but then I guess what they do, or some companies do this, where the player may not, I guess, sign the card itself, but they'll sign something that goes on the card, like a sticker. Yeah, yeah.
That's been big, yeah.
Yeah.
Some people only like to collect on-card autographs.
Mm-hmm.
Some people don't care if you don't notice the sticker, you know, it doesn't matter. But typically on-card autographs sell for more than sticker autographs of the exact same type thing.
Right.
You know, you were talking about postcards during COVID. For 1 month or so, I started looking up old postcards that were postmarked and stamped from the time, like early 1900s, late 1800s. And I found a couple things that were really not that expensive. Like I found a Teddy Roosevelt with a full picture on one side, and it was postmarked the month that he actually became president. Mm. So I thought, you know, that was cool, and it really was hardly anything. I bought a postmarked and stamped Tigers team card that had Ty Cobb and Sam Crawford on the team, you know, and I thought, that's authenticated on the old postcards. You know they're legit from the time, because they might get a lower grade from the grading company because they have the markings on it, but that's better than any authentication. You know it was done then.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty neat, and I only did it for a month or so, but I'm glad I did that. So there's so many different things you can collect.
Oh, yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, you want to make sure you do your research,
right,
and you're paying the right amount for the time.
The reason I got a lot of the Jeter and Rivera stuff, so I'm a Cubs fan, so I do have like the Chicago. Like my dad's from Illinois, so I kind of, you know, I'm 36. So when I was living in Ohio at the time, I'm in Virginia now. But when I was in Ohio, we had WGN back when it was on WGN. So you know, I had the Cubs connection. I grew up with the Sosa, the '98, the home run chase, and all that. So I had the Cubs side of it. But I was living in Columbus, and the Columbus Clippers at the time were the Yankees farm club. So I went to Clippers games, and I think the Yankee connection really came in from my uncle, who he's actually the one, when I was at his house during football season, we watched some games and stuff, and he has a bunch of old cards. And I remember I emailed you some because he has literally sheets of like duplicates of the same. I mean, like you said, they could probably fetch well at an auction. And I'm really, and he's got so many of the same player, like I don't know if it was Yogi Berra or whoever. So you could definitely sell a couple or auction a couple of them and still have a bunch.
That's what I recommend to people. I mean, if you have four from 1958 of Mickey Mantle, you don't need to keep four.
Yeah.
You know, sell two of them, sell one of them, and see how it does. Then, you know, when I send things to auction, we look them over, and if something will do better in auction value by being graded, if it pays for the grading, they'll get it graded beforehand. There's some of the old cards that have to be, like if you have a Pete Rose rookie, any grade, you have to get it graded before you auction it, or an Ernie Banks rookie, or obviously Mickey Mantle stuff. It's like, you know, big time stuff.
Yeah.
It's kind of like grading's a necessary evil because they really charge a lot. And they started doing the thing a few years ago where, okay, we're going to charge you based on what the current value is of that card in that grade. It's kind of basically they're paying themselves commission, you know, on your card. So some things are so expensive to get graded, you almost have, unless you have the money for it, you send it to an auction house to sell it for you because you wouldn't be able to pay for the grading fees.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But once again, like let's say it's going to be $2,000 to grade it. Well, maybe it's going to sell for $50,000 to $75,000.
Oh, wow.
You know, so you're like, okay, fine. And then they just subtract that from the money you have coming.
Yeah. I mean, unless you know, I guess it's hard to know sometimes if it's worth it. But $50,000 payoff is pretty nice.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, there's guys that I actually had a story when I first closed the shop. My wife had the idea. I was like, well, where am I going to meet people now, listeners? Because they, you know, people always want me to send stuff to auction. And we did it at the library. You could reserve a conference room and meet people, and it's worked great. The first guy that I met at the library was a guy who listened to the radio show, followed me on Twitter, and he sent me a message. We had been talking about the value of a Jordan first game Bulls game tickets were selling for a ton. So we were talking about that, and he had two ticket stubs from Jordan's first game ever at Chicago Stadium, you know, first NBA game. And I sent him in for him. He got for the two of them something like, what he cleared was like $140,000, you know, something like that. And he was a FedEx driver who told me after that he was able to retire a little earlier than he thought because of that. So, I mean, there's big money stuff out there but you have to get stuff like that graded so people know it's legit. And so it's, like I say, it's kind of a necessary evil, but it can really pay off too.
Yeah. And like, my uncle that I was just mentioning, so he's a Yankees fan. And so back when, you know, here in Richmond, Virginia, the Richmond Virginians used to be a farm club to the Yankees. And so anyway, there was kind of that Yankee connection there, and that's why I've kind of gotten a lot of the Jeter Rivera. So I'll see like a, so like any Jeter Rivera card that I see for like that I don't have, and sometimes I've gotten so many now that I got to check to make sure I don't already have it before I sometimes put five, you know, it's like $5-$10, but I'll be like, oh, $5-$10, I'm going to go ahead and grab that. And it's usually like one of the only ones on the, like I'll notice that I'll buy a card off the site, and then as soon as I get it, it's gone. Like they only had a couple or a one.
Yeah.
But have you ever been to Cooperstown?
No, I actually haven't. My brother called me from there one time, and we'd talk about it when we were kids, but I never have really had the time to go there. So yeah, it's fun. Did you go? It's cool.
Yeah, yeah. So I solo tripped there in 2021. I actually went to Jeter's induction, or I went to the Hall of Fame induction that year. So it was like Jeter, Larry Walker, Ted Simmons, and Marvin Miller. And that was cool because, you know, I was going to go in 2020, and then of course COVID happened. I literally booked everything. Well, I mean, all I did was, what did I do? I got like a hotel or whatever. And then, the week of COVID. And then as soon as, you know, that week came and went, I realized this is probably not happening this year. So I got my money back. It wasn't a big deal, but, I wasn't sure I was going to make it there for it. So, cause 2020, they canceled it, and then in 2021 they said they were going to do it, but it was going to be a reduced like audience or crowd size. So instead of doing it in the summer, they did it in the fall of 2021. So I still went. It was awesome to be there for the induction, first time there. And then I went back last year with my parents for the first time, or they went with me for the first time. So we went back last year. And I actually got a couple of Michael Jordan. I have like three or four Michael Jordan baseball White Sox cards, you know, $5-$10. So, you know, it's cool to get the Jordan, you know, baseball cards when I see them. But yeah, like I said, I'll get like a lot of, so I've gotten a few like Jeter and Rivera cards that were signed or autographed from Cooperstown. And, you know, maybe they were $150, $200. Maybe I've spent a little more than I could have gotten them otherwise. I don't really know. But I'm like, well, I'm not spending $1,000, and it's kind of, you know, it's kind of personal, I guess, like I like them, but I'm not going to be doing $200-$300 for most cards usually. But I did get a Dansby Swanson card when it was with the Braves. I mean, the card is of him when he was with the Braves, and it was signed. So I'm like, well, that's cool. I don't know if I spent more than I probably could have gotten it otherwise, but yeah, for the most part, I would say a lot of the cards are, you know, $5 to $20, something like that.
Yeah, it sounds like you're doing fine.
Yeah.
You're definitely thinking things over before you buy them, which is always good.
Yeah, a little bit of a system. I did want to mention, going back to like all the different card companies, and then of course the different grading companies, and you mentioned like PSA, and isn't Beckett another one that does grading? And I think it's SGC.
Beckett used to be huge with basketball and newer stuff, but they seem to not be as popular. You don't see them at the big auction houses as much with the Beckett stuff. It's mainly PSA and SGC with the vintage stuff. Beckett used to do a good job with it. I just think the bigger guys recognize more, you know, PSA and SGC. So I don't pay as much attention to newer stuff anymore. Like I picked up a Booz Ellis autograph before he started playing more, just because I thought, this guy's got a chance to be good. It wasn't that expensive. But newer stuff, I don't buy that much. One of the reasons I closed the store when I did during COVID, the price of products from the card companies got so high, and then they were keeping it high. It's kind of like it just wasn't seeming worth it to open stuff,
right?
You know, so you kind of just have to figure all that stuff in, you know, the cost. And but meanwhile, then you can, on a newer guy, if you really like them, you can buy their cards and get something you really like. If you get before they're real hot, and you can buy something already graded for $20-$30, a real nice card of a guy.
Yeah, just a few more things. So talking about Michael Jordan, I've actually been getting, you know, when I can, I've been getting a lot of his different jerseys that he had throughout his career, because I thought that'd be cool. And it, again, it started with one a couple of years ago. And then I was like, you know, it'd be cool to get a few more if I can. So every now and then I'll get like a Jordan or a, like Kobe Bryant jersey. And it, I like to get them from like the authentics. I try to get the authentics when I can, even though they are pricier. Yeah. I don't like to get the replicas if I don't have to necessarily. So, you know, like Mitchell & Ness is the site that I would like to get them from, except you got to pay the shipping no matter how much you're spending. So if I can find Mitchell & Ness from like Lids or Fanatics, same thing, but without, you know, they'll usually either have free shipping or reduced shipping. You know, I try to get a little bit of a break where I can, or some kind of a sale. But I noticed that a lot of, and I get it, a lot of the Jordan stuff will never be on sale because they know people are going to pay for the most part. But yeah, I've been getting a lot of his jerseys. So like, I don't really wear jerseys necessarily like I used to, but I have a closet full of different ones that are just, you know, awesome to have and kind of look at. But it's obviously that's another high price thing when you get in the jerseys and stuff. Do you collect or did you collect a lot of jerseys and things like that?
I never did, actually, or shoes like, yeah. You know, game-worn jerseys. I have, I think, maybe two or three game-used bats, but jerseys I didn't. I never was into shoes at all. Like, you know, I had to get shoes to wear for basketball, but the idea of collecting them, it just never made sense to me. But I know that's a huge market. If you have the original Jordans and things like that, I mean, it's big money. It's just not anything that I was ever interested in.
Yeah, a lot of my all of my jerseys are not game worn. They're just, you know, typical. Like you could buy them, and but still, it's like cool to have like the different.
It is
the Jordan ones.
If they go out of production, and once again, it's something you like, so that's great.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and then I got a huge card case from, I think it was Card King Pro, if you're familiar with that site. It's pretty nice, sturdy case to just put all these cards in, and I'm realizing, like, I think technically it can fit maybe up to 1,000 or 2,000 cards, but that's only if they're in, like, those very thin cases. A lot of these cards have these thicker cases, so it takes up a little bit more space. But no, it's been awesome to chat with you and just kind of pick your brain and just kind of learn. Like you said, you got to research this stuff to kind of, you know, I guess follow up and learn all the different things and all the ways that you can kind of explore the value of things. But before I let you go, I guess what's your favorite thing that you've either owned or would never sell, like any specific card or thing like that?
Well, I have a Jordan autograph card from Upper Deck that one of my customers this would have been in the early 2000s, like in three times in a row he came in, he pulled Jordan autographs out of Upper Deck packs, which was crazy because they weren't that easy to get out, you know, at the time. And he was like, geez, I got to sell one of these. And I go, well, if we look up what the market is on that one, I'll pay for that, whatever it is. And at the time, it was $300, I think. So I paid him for that, and I still have that, and I doubt I would ever sell that. It's worth a lot more than $300 now. But that would be one of the last things I would sell. But, you know, I end up being a lot of things that I have I like enough where I'll sell stuff, but I kind of have levels that this group here, I don't want to sell unless it's dire emergency.
Right.
The group right around them, well, I could sell those, but I don't really want to. And then there's another group around that, some pretty good stuff, but you know, I'll sell them or keep them, whatever. So I kind of organize it that way. By the way, if anybody does have a question, tcrowntom@gmail.com. I get questions about things from people all the time. And, you know, our radio show, it's live from 7 to 8, but the ESPN Chicago radio app, it's on there all the time throughout the week.
And, like, I've emailed you, and you're super fast to respond, which is awesome. Always appreciate it as far as you just even answering, you know, my questions and stuff and putting up with me. I know I've had a few questions where I was just, like, it was just making me more curious. So I was appreciative of your time, and you're just getting back to me on those.
I always try to get back to people, you know, and if it's – if it's something that's not valuable, I'll just be honest with you and say, well, you know, those sell for like $1 on yep. eBay or whatever. But then if it is something that's valuable, I'll let you know roughly what the market is.
Yeah, like I know most of the cards, like I was saying, I've gotten from Cooperstown. But when I was actually in Cooperstown, they have a bunch of card shops all around the area. And I got so many for like $1. Like I know they're not worth anything because they are like $1, $2. But I'm like, oh, it's just cool. Like Soto at the time or like Juan Soto or whoever, you know, Tom Glavine on skates when he was a hockey player or coming out, you know, stuff like that. It's like, oh, okay, it's not worth a ton, but it's just, you know, a few bucks in change, basically. I'm like, I could get those, but...
Boils down to collect what you like.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about.
I think that's my main thing. My system is just collect what I like, and yeah, if it's... if I'm spending a couple $100, I would like to think it's worth that much, and if not more, but at the very least, I like it, so it is what it is, but... Yeah. Yeah, but no, I appreciate your time today.
It was fun. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, hope you have a good Mother's Day with everybody. And yeah, look forward to listening again this upcoming Saturday.
All right. Good luck to you.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Tom. Have a great day.